This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wednesday, but we are going to get away from baseball for just a few moments. Talk a little National Football League.
I like it.
In June.
That sounds about right.
Never a bad time to be talking only National Football League. Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network, Chargers radio analyst, joins us here on Gwynn and Chris on the SDCC Fan Hotline. Daniel, how are you today?
I'm going great. What's going on, Chris? How you doing, Tony?
We're doing well. We're doing very well.
We're hanging in there. How has the Chargers offseason been up until now? Would you give it a thumbs up?
Yeah, no, I think it's very positive. Having a chance to go up there for one of their final practices and see just the depth that they've been able to develop. You know, I think Tom Telesco's really done a nice job of kind of looking at last year and saying, okay, win 12 games, but you don't get where you ultimately want to go. And a couple areas that they had to address, really, the linebacker position. I mean, you win a playoff game with no linebackers is an incredible feat that is. With Gus Bradley, what he was able to do there against Baltimore, it caught up to him against the Patriots. So got a lot of depth at linebacker, and I like the way that some of these young offensive linemen look. We'll give them some depth there as well.
Daniel, I think one of the questions on a lot of Charger fans' mind is how much longer they'll get to watch Philip Rivers at the quarterback position. Well, he doesn't seem to be letting up at all, but how much longer do you think he can keep this up?
Well, you know, look, the way he plays the game, and it's so much of it is from the neck up.
Yeah.
Just so dang smart, and how he's able to. He's seen everything. I mean, so there's not a blitz you're going to throw at him. It's not a coverage. You're not going to be able to trap him. He just is so sharp. And I think when you look at the young skill players that they've built up around him, I mean, he's obviously never short on energy, but.
to say the least.
As strong as it's ever been. With this group that he's got a chance to win. So, you know, you go back and look at a period of time where I don't know how long it was, gosh, 5 years or so, where the team just that they put on the field wasn't good enough to win. And I think when that's happening, you start to question, okay, how long is Philip going to play? How long would a quarterback want to do this? But he looks like a young 37 around all these kids they've got on offense.
Daniel Jeremiah is with us, calls Charger games on the radio, NFL Network analyst as well, SDCCU Fan Hotline. Yes, obviously that loss to New England left a bad taste. However, I mean, if you're a Charger fan, you have to be thinking at least partly, hey, you know, it was New England that once again went on and won the Super Bowl, so it's not like we are that far away. How far away do you get the feeling that Charger fans think this team is?
I think they think they're pretty close, and you know, and they can make the connection you just made. Okay, it's a 12-win team. You beat Kansas City, who you know, look, had a great shot at beating New England, and then you lose to the team that ultimately won the Super Bowl. But man, having been in that stadium and that game with the Patriots, it was never close.
Yeah.
So there's still some ground that needed to be made up there, and I think as these young skill position players start to grow, they got a taste of that. In the postseason, I think that's going to help them going forward. And I'm anxious to see if they can get Bosa healthy for 16 games, combined with Ingram, and then you mix in Zuri Tillery, who they just drafted. And they've got the kid out of USC who's really, really explosive, and Achenna Nwosu going to his second year. And all, I mean, they've got dudes up front. And when I'm looking at teams that have a chance to win the whole thing, I guess, Tony, maybe in baseball you talk about teams up the middle and pitching.
Yeah.
In the NFL, it's if you got a quarterback and a pass rush, you got a good shot.
Well, that definitely puts the Chargers right in the thick of things. All right, I'm going to ask you to put your psychic hat on for a second. In June, late June, who's going to be the most improved team in this season, this 2019 season?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to stay in California. I'm going to go to the 49ers. And really, just piggybacking off what I just said, if those are the two most important areas, which I believe they are, You get Garoppolo healthy, hopefully. That's a big upgrade over what they played with last year at the quarterback position.
Oh, yeah.
Who fits beautifully into Shanahan's
team. CJ Beathard is really sorry to hear you say that, though.
Yeah, no, I know, but hey. But a great football family, though.
Yes, that's right. That's right. That's right.
Football family.
Yes.
But when then you go out and you trade for Dee Ford and you draft Nick Bosa to go along with DeForest Buckner, and hopefully they get something out of Solomon Thomas, but that's a lot of talent in their defensive line. So you've got better at the two most important spots. And, you know, this offseason and talking to different coaches around the league, it's weird because, you know, the Niners haven't won anything. They haven't won many games with Shanahan. But you will not find a more respected play caller. And I guess you maybe say McVay, but Kyle Shanahan and him and McVay are, you know, former partners there. His reputation is sterling. And there's a lot of belief around the league that that's a team to watch.
They do love Kyle Shanahan. Right? I mean, we were talking about that last year. As they were losing game after game after game after game, all these coaches have their jobs in jeopardy, except Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah.
He was like...
No, he's fine. He's good.
Right. He's excellent. He's doing an excellent job. Daniel Jeremiah is with us. The Bears, I thought, were a big shock last year. They made a huge jump all the way up to 12-4. Obviously, the Rams, the Saints, looked like they were coming. The NFC East is wide open. Is there, besides the 49ers, is there another Bears out there? And then in the AFC, I mean, if... Would it be smart to make a bet and say, I'll just take the Patriots and give you the rest of the teams?
The field.
Because I know it seems it would seem smart to take the field, right? But my goodness, the Patriots do this every single time. So it's hard to fall in love with anyone else.
Yeah, death taxes, 12 wins for the Patriots. They're at minimum, they're going to be in the conference championship game. They've proven that.
Yeah.
They win that division each and every year. So it's hard not to just spot them. Those two right there are going to start the season as division champs, and then they're in the AFC championship game. And usually, more times than not, it wasn't last year, but they're playing that at home. So, yeah, I would still, if you gave me the option, I'd take the Patriots. You'll let everybody else have the field. If you're looking for a team like that, that's a good call on the Bears. Like, who could make that type of a leap? Cleveland has tremendous talent. I mean, they have built a lot of talent there. John Dorsey's accumulated now. The question is, how does that talent turn into a team? Those are two different deals. But just talent-wise, yeah, they have a lot of dudes there.
Yeah, Kitchens and Dorsey has their hands full trying to mold what you called a team because they certainly have the talent. Daniel, I got to ask you one question before we let you get out of here. Your name was mentioned in that GM for a GM position for the Jets there before Joe Douglas was hired. Is that something that is even of interest to you? Is that a goal of yours?
You know what? Truthfully, I'm so happy doing what I'm doing right now, and I'm having so much fun. And you know, I don't know that I see those two home runs today by Reyes if I'm having to worry about the Jets.
That's very true.
Try and win some football games. So I like the balance in life that I have right now. I'm not saying never, but maybe there's a time, but the time's not right now. My kids are in high school and doing great. And you know, the Padres are watchable. So, I mean, what more do you want?
It's an honor. I hear you on that. It's got to feel like an honor, though, to be considered for a general manager position in the NFL, even if it was just the Jets.
Yeah.
I didn't mean it like that. I'm just kidding, obviously. I'm obviously kidding.
That's great. It always is. It's good that, you know, that you got some people out there that think highly of you. And to be honest with you, if one of my three best friends on planet Earth got the job. So Joe Douglas is somebody that I've been friends with for 15-plus years. We worked together in Baltimore. So they're in great hands, and I'm excited for him to get that opportunity. So all is well that ends well there. We just need to make sure that Tatis doesn't go back on the injured list, and we'll all have a merry summer.
We won't let him. We won't let him. All right, Daniel loves.
How fun is that guy, by the way? Real quick,
he is. I mean, we talk about it all the time. He is contagious. Like that whole team just feeds off him, and he's going to be special, man. San Diego's got a good one on their hands. I don't know if we've ever had a player this exciting in a very very long time.
Oh. Not this young.
No,
this
we've
exciting.
Got my kids. There's young kids. I'm telling you, this is not an exaggeration. There's young kids. I've got two boys in my house that they've not given a flip about baseball in a very long time. That have their Tatis jerseys, and if he's up the bat, they're not moving.
You know what's funny is that's the most sold jersey at the stadium. Like, there's no more Tatis Jr. jerseys at the store where there wasn't one last homestand. That's how popular that guy is.
No, it's fun.
Yeah. No, well, we said it from the second game of the season on. this is a Padre team that makes it difficult to get up and go buy a hot dog.
Yeah.
Because they have guys you actually want to watch. So
Chris, you remember, like, I mean, look, I'm not telling Tony that he doesn't know. Chris, you remember, like, growing up as somebody in San Diego, even when the Padres were bad, we always had Tony. We could go watch Tony, and that was, as a kid growing up, that was worth the price of admission. And then when the Chargers were bad, you go watch Junior.
Right.
Like, in San Diego, we want winners, yeah, but just give us something. And now the Padres have something.
We're a relatively easy fan base to please, right? And just give us something to watch.
Yes.
Unless you get swept in Pittsburgh, then people get angry.
Oh, that was rough.
All right.
Thank you, Daniel, for your
time.
Daniel,
thanks for everything, man. Appreciate it. Have a great year.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I say.
It's now time for Gwen and Chris to rank their top five of the day.
Gonna grip and rip as usual.
But this isn't just a regular top five list.
I love it. It sounds sadistic, but I love it.
This is the countdown. And it starts right now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, some of these new intros are going to take some getting used to.
Oh, that's hilarious.
That was as nice as I could make it.
You didn't like that?
Not as much as the other ones, no. Not yet.
Okay, all right.
I might eventually.
As long as you said yeah.
Yeah, I was lost on that one.
All right, we only got 4 minutes, so.
All right, that's all? 4 minutes for our whole countdown?
Well, I guess you got five if you start now.
Top five favorite cars. Ready? Go.
Number five.
You want me to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Do you want me to?
No, you go first.
Number five, all-time favorite car for me, 1972 Mercedes-Benz 280i.
Ooh,
just
that's
classy
a good one.
All the way. I don't have a picture in front of me, but you're just going to have to take my word for it. Fantastic.
Okay, number five on my list is a 64 Impala ragtop.
Ah, I knew an Impala was going to get in there.
Oh, there's two of them on there, too. Don't
you
worry.
You got two Impalas?
I got two Impalas on
an
there.
Impala.
Number four.
Love that. Number four. Favorite car for me is a 1991 Jeep Cherokee Limited.
Ooh.
I do not like SUVs in general.
Okay.
I all my favorite cars are coupes, things of that nature. But that Jeep Cherokee Limited, I always wanted one of those. I never got one. Thought they looked really, really sharp.
Okay.
That's a good one.
The limited one.
The limited one. Number four on my list. It was my first car in college. I had at the time, 2000 Monte Carlo.
Oh, you and I are car brothers. I drove a Monte Carlo in high school.
Wow.
That's the best car I've ever owned.
It was the biggest whale car I've ever seen in my life. I don't even know how that parking spot's big enough to fit the car
into.
Yeah,
you had the big bad boy.
I had the huge one.
Yeah, mine was a little bit more slim version of it, but
mine was a 1980s version that didn't care how much gas it guzzled. It was white with red interior, too, and I don't know that that's the world's best look, but that's
number three.
Is that number three? Or four?
Three.
The list is off.
1966 Ford Mustang for me.
Ooh, that's a good one. I don't like old cars, but I like old Mustangs.
Old Mustangs are great. I know Tony's a Mustang guy, but the 1966 Ford Mustang, look it up, just sharp. Just really would be a neat car to put together and make it all shiny and nice and new and drive it around right now.
Number three on my list, my mom owns this car, and I enjoy when she lets me drive it. It's a 2015 Ford Raptor.
Oh,
this bad boy.
Don't know that.
Scoots, man.
It is the F-150 on steroids.
Exactly. That's a great way to describe it right
there. It's like the off the lot, ready to go race in the off-road races.
Really? that? Your mom drives
yeah,
that?
Yeah, your mom drives that?
If I give you a little background, my mom also rode Harleys for like until my dad was like, okay, I've had enough of you riding
That's crazy.
Harley. Yes. My mom used to get on like the real rides. Like they'd ride off to Alpine and...
Wow.
Yeah.
Way to go, Alicia.
Number two.
My dad had one of these when I was growing up, and we drove to every Dodger game in it. We piled myself, two stepbrothers, and two large dogs into a 1959 Corvette, which can seat basically one. So yes. We would all jam into this thing and fire our way down to Dodger Stadium. A 1959 Corvette is a classic. That's my number two.
My number two, I'm not sure which 90s, but my dad owned this, he owned a 911 Porsche, and it had the license plate TG19 on it. A lot of people...
Bummer.
A lot of people liked seeing him around in that car. That was one of my favorite cars to ride in with him.
Did he like driving around and like being honked at and pointed at all the time?
I was just thinking that.
Not.
I don't know if he did or didn't, but it happened all the time.
It must have happened, yeah. If you had one that said TG19.
He rolled around with that top down all the time, so people had to see him.
All right.
Number one.
Number one is basically not an SUV, but any other Lexus. I have just always loved Lexus. I wanted one since they started making them, and I was old enough to think about getting one, and I got one, and I still have one, and I've had about 9 in a row.
Really?
And I just love Lexuses, so they're number one. Doesn't matter what letter, number. Just not an SUV, because I don't like those.
I told you guys that I had two Impalas on there.
Yes, I want to hear about your number one Impala.
My number one is a 1994 Impala. Chevy Impala. This is I have one. I got one about 4 years ago. It's like my dream high school car. And I still own it. It's one of my favorite rides to get in.
You just tell you
big old long thing.
Oh, look at these things. You got to call up a picture of a 1994 Impala. You're going to love it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Thumbs up. Does that mean Eric's with us? Eric is with us. Eric Carrolls, Fox Sports analyst, joint former Dodger, former Rookie of the Year. I don't want to forget all this stuff.
Former Patrick Henry Patriot.
Former, can't forget that part, San Diegan at Hark. Eric Carrolls joins us on the Gwynn and Chris Show. Eric, thank you for joining us. How are you doing today?
Gwynn, what's happening? Good to be on. Chris, you too, my man.
Thank you so much. By the way, heard your broadcast or watched your broadcast Saturday. I believe it was Rockies Giants. And
Rockies Dodgers.
My God, that's right. It was Rockies right? Dodgers. They played the Giants after, but Rockies Dodgers and walk off weekend for the Dodgers, 3 in a row. That's off the charts. But this is what we deal with how good the Dodgers are, right?
Deep, very deep, very versatile. I mean, you know, the walk offs. I think the thing that was amazing, three different rookies. And it just, I mean, it speaks to volumes, you know, how versatile they are, the depth of the organization. And look, I mean, the Rockies played them toe-to-toe, and, you know, the Dodgers were fortunate to come out on the winning end for the weekend.
All right, Eric, some San Diegans have a bone to pick with you, man. Your top five rookies came out, and there was a name that was not on the list, Fernando Tatis Jr. And I make the point that, listen, this is a really, really strong rookie class this year, at least as of June 26th. What went into your thinking as far as the top five? Why those guys?
Well, so if the segment was which rookies have made the most impact. So there are, there's probably about 10, 15 guys this year that you could choose from.
Easily.
And the Tatis Jr. for me probably will be the best player of this class, without question. I mean, you know, to think that, he's just because he wasn't mentioned, because he's been hurt, because he's been out, you know, I mean, I'm not sure that he even would qualify right now for any of the, you know, when they have the awards, you qualify.
He's like 60 plate appearances short right now. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I mean, I have to have reasons. You know, they asked me to take five. So, The five that I picked, if you look at them, all have impact on playoff-type teams. If the season were to end that day when we did the segment, all of these guys were on playoff teams except for one, and that's Peter Alonso, who I put at the top.
Yeah.
And, you know, quite frankly, when you're talking about MVP of the National League, his numbers, he's in the top five.
No doubt.
He's
no
in
doubt.
The top five. So that's what it was. Absolutely no slight. Fernando Tatis Jr., I had an opportunity to see him at the beginning of the year. And now if the question was posed to me, who do I think is going to have the best career or who has the ability to be the best player, you know, things would be a little different. And without question, your man in San Diego would be right at the top.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be good. You know what's interesting, Eric, is, I mean, you were a National League Rookie of the Year in 1992.
Uh-huh.
And now, like, in order to be Rookie of the Year, you almost have to do, like, three or four times more than you probably accomplished in 1992. And I'm just saying that that's how many guys there are. And you just talked about how strong and deep the class is. Everybody that comes up now seems like they're more than ready to play than they were back when you were coming up. I just mean that in general.
Yeah, I don't know if they're more than ready. It just seems like maybe guys are athletic. Maybe, I mean, look at the year, you know, it's a different game, and to try to compare generations, you really can't do it. I mean, I hit 20 home runs my rookie year. That was 11th in the league.
Right.
11th in the league.
Right.
So,
that's good,
you know,
right?
It's a different time. It's a different, and you know, look at the game has evolved. You know, guys like Fernando Tatis Jr., you didn't see shortstops that size. You didn't see them that athletic, that offensive. And the game has completely changed. So I think when you compare guys within their era, I think that's fair. When you try to compare a guy, you know, the 50s to the 80s to 2010, it's not, you can't do it. And remember, too, the game is different. The emphasis on things are different. You know, I strike out 120 some odd times, and that was, you know, crazy back then.
Right.
Now you strike out 120 times, you're a, you know, super contact hitter. So
you double your salary.
So it's a different. And these guys, I will acknowledge this. The depth of this year's class is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't even mention, you know, Brian Reynolds, who Pittsburgh, I think, he was hitting 360 at the time we did this segment. Yordan Alvarez. You know, with the Astros, he had seven or eight home runs in 12 games. I mean, it is unbelievable how deep the class is.
Eric,
fantastic.
One more question before we let you get out of here. You know, we're running up on this All-Star game, and, you know, I think there's some guys out there that feel like they're already kind of putting out landmines about them not making the team. If there's a way that you could, you know, change the All-Star game or make it so that it could be, I don't know, somebody's going to get left out all the time. But if there was one thing you could change there or add to the All-Star game, what would it be?
Wow. It's not going to be fair.
Right.
You know, I would say that if you let the players vote, you would probably get the best representation unless, you know, there were some guys that people just, you know, guys didn't like. But then it's the fans' game. So, wasn't ready for that question, and I don't know what I would do, but you know, I think that the point you hit, there's always going to be people that, you know, feel that they're slighted. And just for instance, you look at this year, you know, if you're a National League first baseman, I mean, somebody's staying home.
Yeah.
And if you were in the American League playing first base, I mean, you can't give that position away in the American League. I mean, it's crazy, and it's constantly evolving. But it's still fun to watch, and, you know, I look forward to watching it again this year.
All right, I want to see if you're ready for this question, and then you're out of here. Who's the all-time Los Angeles Dodgers home run hitting leader? As
you don't
an LA Dodger.
You don't need to do that. Look, I like Chris Paddock as a rookie this year too, all right? So,
you know. Oh, no, we're not going there. I want to congratulate you on having that honor, man. There's been a lot of great Los Angeles Dodgers, and nobody's hit more home runs than Eric Caro. So I wanted to get that
good.
In.
Patrick Henry Patriots.
Not a baby, Eric.
Guys. Remember that.
Representing.
Thank you, Eric,
for coming
on.
Nice talking with you.
Take
Eric Caro's right there.
Well.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Go, Scraby!
I missed the... No, I'm just kidding. Let's go.
It's now time for the most unpredictable, most wacky, most opinionated segment of the show.
I wouldn't brag about it.
Gwen and Chris talk about the best of the rest.
Great balls, you fire!
Ooh, with a twist.
Personally, I think we got hosed on that call.
The Big Five begins right now.
Don't panic, but there's absolutely nothing to worry about.
On 97.3 The Fan.
How about that one, guys? How about that one?
What? Meh.
The new open.
Meh.
I just got a meh?
Meh.
By the way, we will have an Odd Thomas open for Friday.
We've been only been waiting for like 4 months, right?
Yep.
Right.
Since the beginning of the baseball season. The Padres played their 80th game today. I've been telling everybody I've been going to make it since their first. So.
Tomorrow is the official halfway point. Huh?
They don't play tomorrow.
I mean,
so
you
Friday.
Know what I meant.
Took a turn real quick on me. All right, let's get started.
Number 5.
Did you guys hear about this Mets thing? Not the Nets thing, the Mets thing.
Are you okay to do this Big Five?
I need some more eco water, okay. That's for sure. Because
good silk, shameless plug right there. I love it.
Yeah. The Mets are becoming the most dramatic franchise in baseball. Not for the right reason. After Mets manager Mickey Callaway and a player went after a reporter, there's news out that new GM, former agent Brody Van Wagenen, may have given Mickey Callaway orders to pull Jacob deGrom from his start against the Diamondbacks on June 1st when the right-hander sustained a hip cramp. Van Wagenen was not in Arizona when he provided this directive, but following the Mets' loss Monday to the Phillies, rumors have begun circulating about these directives, which prompted Van Wagenen to make himself available to the media to clear up any related questions. He said about this, quote, "It's not true." That's what he said to the media. So, Tony, do you think GMs should ever make playing decisions with their baseball teams?
Well, we're talking in 2019... and I think it happens. It's a collective, they call it a collective brain, right? Everybody who's important gets a little bit of a say. And in most organizations, the manager gets the ultimate say. But I don't know if we're in a place anymore where I could say, no, they shouldn't have a hand in it. The game is just played differently. It's thought of differently. So this doesn't surprise me. I don't know if you should be phoning in during a game and you're not even there saying, hey, get that guy out. I think that's kind of undermines your manager. If players find out that that's true, whoo, you will no longer...
Yeah, what would happen?
Now players know they can that you're not making a decision.
They can get away with anything at that point.
They will push the envelope once they know that, which is why teams have, even when that's been the case, they fight hard not to let that... get out. You know what I'm saying? Because it can be devastating to a team morale and to a manager's authority. So I can't though say that that GM shouldn't, because I think in most organizations nowadays, even though they're not right in the lineup, they have input. And that wasn't always the case. No. It used to just be, well, you sign the players, I coach the players, I write the lineups.
Brody Van Wagenen was an agent before this. Was he a baseball player at some point or anything like that?
That I don't know.
Things have changed, no question about it. I'd love to see, what's his name, Brody Van Wagenen?
Yes.
Love to see him call Dick Williams in the mid-80s. Ooh. And tell him to pull Ed Whitson from a game.
Wouldn't have ended well.
That would not have ended well. However, does it happen now? I believe it does, without question. And we talk about it in the Padres situation a lot. Do we honestly believe that Andy Green has come up with the pitch limit and inning limit for every one of these pitchers on the staff? No, of course he hasn't. So I think everybody's involved in that decision, which means that his decisions are dictated by others.
I like it.
It's just the way it is.
It's pretty crazy, though. Pretty crazy.
Number 4.
NBA free agency is going to be very active and a lot of big names are involved. One of those big names is once Laker D'Angelo Russell. He was traded by the Lakers to the Nets after some locker room issues, and now there are reports out that the Lakers are interested in him one more time here in free agency. Chris, do you think D'Angelo Russell would be a good fit with the Lakers?
Yeah, pretty good. This version, better than the last version. Looked like he found his game a little bit last year. And as I mentioned earlier with the Jimmy Butler conversation, I think that the Lakers need something dynamic in the backcourt. And I think D'Angelo Russell would be a place to look for that dynamic player.
Tony, as our resident Lakers fan, what do you think about D'Angelo Russell rejoining the Lakers?
I like it. I like the idea. He's not going to cost as much as some of the max contract guys. And listen, I never had a problem with D'Angelo's game. It was his maturity that was really in question. And you're in a locker room with 15, 14 other guys. They need to be able to trust you. And it was pretty clear that nobody in that Laker locker room the first time around trusted him after the incident with Nick Young and Iggy Azalea. So it seems like he's in a much better place as an adult now. His game has just matured as well. So, yeah, and as Chris said, the Lakers are desperate for some backcourt help. They have the front line is set. They just got to find a way. Well, they don't have a center yet either, but they got to get backcourt help, and D'Angelo Russell would help tremendously. And he's young, 23.
And just like that, the Lakers could be right in it.
Number three.
The Olympics might have a new sport allowing competitors to dance their way to gold. Breakdancing was provisionally approved.
Knock it off.
I'm not kidding. On Tuesday, to become an Olympic sport for the 2024 Summer Games in Paris, breakdancing, termed breaking in Olympic circles, made its debut last October at the Buenos Aires Youth Summer Games. The IOC will make its final decision in December of 2020. Paris is also looking to add three other sports to its competition: skateboarding, sport climbing, and surfing. Those three are set to make their debut in Tokyo next year. But right after this breakdancing thing was announced, the internet then debated a really good question. And Tony, I'm going to ask you and Chris that question. Is breakdancing a sport?
No.
Why?
It's an art.
Ooh.
Breakdancing is an art.
I like where you went with that.
You know, it's not a sport. And I think most breakers would tell you that it's an art. It's an art form. Just like beatboxing, just like, you know, that came out of the hip-hop world.
Yeah.
So I'm going to call it an art. I don't believe it's a sport, but I'm not going to lie. I would tune in to watch some Olympic breakdancing because I would love to see what the other countries are doing when it comes to that.
Like, that's a great point. Chris, what do you think? Is breakdancing a sport?
It sure beats ballroom dancing.
That is an Olympic event.
Is it really?
It is. It's already an Olympic
sport.
Does that
one not make the TV? Does that not?
I've seen it.
You've seen it?
I have.
I think you have to be up early. They may cut to it at like
the very
8:27 in the morning.
It's on
something.
The Ocho.
Yeah, I don't believe that they have NBC primetime coverage. Yeah, you know, watching paint dry is a sporting event. Ballroom dancing is a sporting event. Walking, I mean, there's magazines out there for walking.
I don't think speed walking is.
So if walking is an event, then why can't breakdancing? You do have to be a whale of an athlete to do some of the moves those guys and gals do. So I'm going to bow to Tony's knowledge and description of it as an art form, but you want to put it in the Olympics, there's already precedent for something
clearly
like this.
So do you think skateboarding is a sport?
Yes.
That should be in the Olympics?
Yes. I don't know. I mean, we could argue whether it should be in the Olympics, but it's a sport.
I would like to see skateboarding, not trick skateboarding. I'd like to see them line up at one end and race like a straight line a half a mile down.
They
the
do
other
have something like that for
now. That would
BMX.
Be interesting.
What's that called? Straight line.
I think it's bike cross.
Why would you call
make
it bike
up?
Cross?
No, no.
A skateboard?
I swear. No. They do have that certain style where you just go down the hill and you have to go over jumps and stuff. I can't remember what it's called.
No,
right
I just
now.
Want to see a flat out race.
I
man.
Think it's BMX
just
cross.
Who gets there first?
All right. I kind of want to see that, too. Just put them on the biggest hill in whatever country they're in.
They don't need to be on a hill. They can be on flat ground. Just who gets there first?
Oh, man, I was a terrible skateboarder.
And guess what? No rules. However you need to get there first, you get there.
No helmets and no guards.
No helmets, no knee pads. I'm tuning in.
Olympic version of roller derby?
That's right. There we go. Look, I want any event where there's a chance for serious injury.
Now, do you also want the like surfing to have to like outrun sharks or something?
No, I'm good on that.
They don't need to put sharks in the ocean. No, that's okay.
Okay.
Number two.
The women of Team USA have a big match coming up against France, but right now the news being made is about Team USA star Megan Rapinoe and President Rapinoe. I knew that too.
Rapinoe.
I've watched this several times. Thank you. I deserve that. I deserve that. Rapinoe. No, I don't know why I said that.
Nate is restless. restless, I tell you.
Yeah. The latest barbs against Rapinoe came after video emerged of her saying she is, quote, not going to the bleeping White House if the U.S. team wins the World Cup. Rapinoe has not... Now I want to say Rapinoe every time I see it. Rapinoe has not been shy sharing her feelings about the presidency and has not held her hand over her heart during the national anthem in protest. President Trump was asked about that and said, quote, Megan should never disrespect our country, the White House, or our flag, especially since so much has been done for her and the team. Be proud of the flag that you wear. The USA is doing great. Chris, do you think Megan Rapinoe is being disrespectful?
No, I do not.
All right.
I'll be honest with you. I watch the national anthem at every Padre game.
Hit him with this. Please tell him.
I'm going to tell you about 4% of the people put their hand over their heart.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right.
And I'm going to be honest with you, the other 96% love this country just as much as those 4%. So if you're going to tell me that she's not being respectful of the country because her hand's not over her heart, I'm not buying that.
Tony, what do you think?
What Chris said. I mean, listen, a lot of people were up in arms about Colin Kaepernick kneeling.
Yes.
Now we're mad at Megan Rapinoe for not putting her hand over.
I think President Trump is maybe the only one mad.
Touche. All I'm saying is I've stood for every national anthem I've ever been a part of, and I can maybe think of a handful of times where I actually had my hand on my heart. I usually had both hands behind my back as I stood in front of the flag. And a lot of guys do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of guys, a lot of guys and gals do it that way. I don't think the heart thing is as important.
Do you remember that dude for the A's that kneeled? He kind of has been blackballed from baseball for kneeling.
Yeah, listen, Adam Jones was onto something when he said that can't go down in this particular sport.
All right.
Number one.
Over the weekend, a fan was hit by an errant foul ball, and the Dodgers have decided to put protective netting all the way down each of the first and third base lines. This comes after the Nationals announced they would be the first team to do that. This all kind of kicked back up because of the two-year-old girl. Remember her? She was struck by a foul ball at Minute Maid Park in Houston on May 29th. Well, they released a statement today saying that she suffered a skull fracture, had a seizure, and she also had subdural bleeding, brain contusions, and is on medication to prevent further seizures. MLB has said they won't require teams to do this, but it seems like this is inevitable. Tony, should it be the team's choice if they want to put up more netting, or Major League Baseball saying they should?
I think it should be the team's choice, and I think Major League Baseball wants the teams to make the right choice, right? They don't want to come off as, the imperial ruler of all. And I think what's going to end up happening is pressure will mount, and more teams will do it. The Dodgers are doing it. Another team already stepped up because there was a...
The Nationals and the Dodgers.
Another team came out and said they're going to have it going all the way to Tampa, I think.
I don't know why Tampa Bay is doing it.
Nobody's there. That's why they'll be splitting Montreal and Tampa at home.
Yeah.
But I don't think baseball should do it, but I think teams will eventually get around to doing it. And I think by beginning of next season, I bet you, if not all, most teams will have that extra net.
Chris, whose responsibility is it?
Well, responsibility is probably the team, but I think it's baseball that's going to do it. They already have guidelines right now, so they just have to increase the guidelines. And I'll go back to what I told you before about hockey. When, 15 years ago, they made every NHL team put netting all the way around the back, behind the net, and up, and every rink looks the exact same. And when that first happened, all the hockey people thought, oh my goodness, this is going to ruin the game forever. Now nobody even notices it. So I don't think it'll be a problem for baseball. I will go back and say that we probably, no matter what we do, cannot protect every single fan from every single ball that's ever hit into the stands. But we can at least try.
I think a thing that's being largely overlooked is that when the new stadiums came into play and they started getting rid of foul territory,
right?
It really started putting fans in more of a dangerous position. You go back to think of the Oakland Coliseum. That is how most foul grounds used to look, Dodger Stadium included. And then the home run boom came, and they thought, okay, we need to bring the fences in, and it changes the dynamic of foul territory. And I think the reason why baseball hasn't been, you guys have to do this, is because every team's stadium's dimensions are different. And, you know, having a netting at the Oakland Coliseum would be a much tougher task than having it at, Petco. You know, Petco. Right, exactly. So I bet you moving forward, for these, as the stadiums start to have to be rebuilt again, they'll have to make sure that foul territory is there to kind of give a little bit more of a buffer than they have right now.
Great point.
You've survived another edition of the Big Five on 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.